Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
That's right, it is. Welcome, welcome to Next Fan App Podcast, the show by the fans, for the fans, and for anybody else who wants to listen. I am Nick Clayton. I am the chief super fan. I am joined here by a couple of other super fans, one of which I hate because he is, you know, represents all that is evil and wrong. But he's here anyway. Monty, the Raiders super fan, how's it going?
I'm doing great, doing fantastic. All is good in the Raiders land. The arrow's pointing up, so your hate will only continue to grow, sir.
I'm just more mildly annoyed with you guys at this point. But it'd be interesting if you become relevant enough for me to hate you. That's fun. We also are joined by Justin, our Seattle Seahawks super fan. How are you doing, Justin?
I am doing absolutely terrific. It's unfortunately that dead part of the off season, so not too much going on. But it feels good to be talking football again.
That's right. And we're hoping that this is scratching a bit of an itch for fans out there that are looking to get a little bit more football talk. Today, we're going to be talking about some of the free agents hitting the market. I mean, obviously, a lot of the really top guys are just going to get tagged, and we're not going to spend too much time on them. But we're going to run through some of the news and some of the free agents that are coming available now. And Monty and I are going to ramble endlessly about how our teams are going to win it all this year. We're going to hit our to-do list. And you'll be hearing over the next several weeks on Next Fan Up, several of the superfans did a lot of homework and put together some of these to-do lists for their teams, what they think they should do, and what is going to be, you know, frankly, realistic, given some of the cap constraints. But if you want to get more and you want to find us more, I'm not sure how you stumbled into the podcast, but where you can find all of our work is at www.blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. You can also chat with us, yell at us, do whatever on Twitter at NFU Podcast, at NFU Podcast. Our email address is nextfanup@gmail.com. And you can find us on Facebook, if just typing in NextFanUp into the Facebook search bar. We actually are really looking for your feedback. We're actually even looking for super fans for several teams. So if you want to be a super fan, and especially if you haven't heard one of us, or at least your team represented on the air, the last few weeks, there's a chance that spot is open, and we'd definitely like to hear your thoughts. And even if it, you know, even if that spot is not open, we want to hear what you think, you know, what you think, whether or not we're doing this right, whether we have the right ideas. And even for the structure of the show, we're changing things up a little bit. So if you want to hear more of me, which I'm sure is the case, if you want to hear less of Monty, which I'm also sure is the case, let us know. Hit us up on all those social media spots, and we will listen, maybe. Anyways, moving on to what's been going on around the league. I mean, one of the big stories that just sort of came out, and look, I mean, it's a sort of like knucklehead off the field story, which I don't really like to spend too much time thinking and talking about, but it is quite remarkable that Joseph Randall, the Cowboys running back, he has now been arrested for his fifth time in 18 months, this time in Kansas. I don't think it was with anybody I know, but he's had just legal problems up and down. He was arrested in Texas 3 weeks ago, you know, and he was, you know, someone called the cops on him somewhere where he was out. I mean, he's a year ago, he was arrested on drug charges after police got called for a domestic violence thing. And it's another one of these really, you know, people say bad apples, but there's a lot of apples in the Cowboys basket there. A lot of them look bad. I mean, what do you guys think of all this?
From my point of view, I think that when Dez Bryant was a questionable, incomplete pass catch away from advancing into the playoffs and making that run against the Detroit Lions, I mean, when your team is winning, all that stuff, you can kind of blow over it, whether you're getting arrested for shoplifting, drug charges, all that stuff, like it's minor. But when losing, it all gets amplified. And for the 90s Cowboys, all the stories that you hear, it sounds like they were getting into pretty serious stuff and winning games, and it worked for them. This particular team, it's not working for them. Joseph Randall seems like a total knucklehead. He had one of the best offensive lines, an opportunity of a lifetime to try to become an actual relevant player, and he, you know, got arrested. I don't know. It's just, there's a bigger picture of Dallas, and it seems like everyone wants to come down. Every team seems to have a knucklehead or two that gets in that route. They seem to have a few more, but when they're winning, it's not a big deal. When they're losing, like now, it's just kind of like, you know, everyone starts giving them the business. So,
and you mentioned an interesting point, you know, that, you know, that they were that maybe catch away from, you know, that there's big Super Bowl run potentially. And, you know, was that moment that one, maybe it was a catch, maybe it wasn't. And that game where they were that close, was that the zenith of this particular window for the Cowboys? I mean, Romo's not getting any younger or healthier. And, you know, we saw how much of a train wreck they were without the competent quarterback play. I mean, what, you know, did they peak? And now we're just going to watch the slow descent.
I think so. This is the sort of team that I don't think that has had the best foundation. You know, their owner / GM really likes to sort of kind of toot his own horn on this organization he's built. You know, they can take these kind of troubled characters. You heard about this a lot with Greg Hardy, which is a situation that hasn't worked out great either. And what you've ended up doing, you know, at best, the organization is just kind of spinning its wheels. They keep taking risks on guys because they think that they'll pan out, and Jerry Jones thinks he's the smartest guy in the room, and stuff like this keeps happening. If I were a Cowboys fan, and I can assure you I am not, but I would be getting pretty frustrated. You know, with the individuals they have on this team, they have had some great transcendent talent on this team. You know, I think Tony Romo is criminally underrated in his career. Des Bryant, when had, you know, DeMarcus Ware at his best. You know, this is a team that has had phenomenal pieces, but as soon as they experience a little bit of diversity, I think they crumble faster than just about any other team in the league.
Yeah, I mean, they remind me of the Chargers, actually, in a lot of ways, and that especially at skill positions, they've had an embarrassment of riches for a lot, you know, most of the last 10 years, maybe 15 years, you know, and they're just are always a trendy pick to win it all, and they always end up 8-8. They always end up choking majorly, and you know, sometimes with even they start out rough, or they'll lose a whole bunch in December, which it tends to be, or it's kind of, you know, shocking. Bad, you know, exits in the playoffs. It seems like those are two similar teams. And I bring up the Chargers also because they are reportedly in talks to re-sign tight end Antonio Gates for at least another year. He, in this past year, he was suspended for 4 games for PEDs. He also, I think he missed at least one game due to injuries, and yet he was still by far their only legit receiving threat with, especially with, what's his face, with their main wide receiver out. Does he have anything left? I mean, should they, what do you guys think about this?
I think he's been, you know, another one of those guys who's an all-time Raider killer. So Antonio Gates, I've got utmost respect for, but yeah, I mean, he's an older dude. I think it's time to move on. So they better not be giving him a substantial amount of money, but if he still wants to play and wants to make average tight end money, by all means, I would bring him in if I was the Chargers. I know their fan base is probably a little bit alienated with all the LA talk and going to LA. Keenan Allen was out. They had a lot of injuries, but I think that Antonio Gates on the crescendo of his career is still better than a lot of tight ends in the league. So as long as they're not paying him like you would pay Gronkowski, I mean, I think it's fair. I haven't seen any of the details of what they're talking about paying him, but he's still good. He had a pretty, you know, rock solid, average, passable season last year, even with the 4-game suspension for juicing.
What do you think, Justin?
Yeah.
I mean, my reaction to it is, I mean, he's like the fastest guy with a beer belly on the field, it seems like. But it also just seems like they could get anybody who could give them a little bit more production than him.
Well, and it's not just about production with him and with that organization. I get that they're a little bit in flux as far as, you know, whether or not they're going to move and all that. But even if you bring back Antonio Gates at the league minimum for another year or two, my question is, to what end do you feel like you're just a couple pieces away from making a push? Because I really don't think they're that close. And so what you're doing instead is you're taking snaps away from the development of what could be your tight end of the future. You're eating up space that could be the next of good players to your team. As great as Antonio Gates is, and he has been a phenomenal player, this is a case where I really think it would be addition by subtraction. You know, he's not a lot of people realize this, but he's not typically on the field for the first couple of weeks of the game. He's only he started about half the game he was available for this year. You know, he does still produce, but even at a league minimum, which when you're a vested veteran worth more than 10 in the league is still real money, you can do so much more that's about the roster, not just this year, but next year and getting better going forward. So I think they absolutely have to move on. And Antonio Gates, if he still feels like he has good football in him, go to a contender and a team almost there and try and get a ring to cap off what's been a stellar career.
Yeah,
seems like
I also
had that guy in the wings, though. Ladarius Green is supposed to be the next big thing. They've had him on the roster for the last couple of years, but he hasn't emerged as that guy. And I honestly don't know their salary cap situation, if they're in a place where they're looking to, you know, save money. Of course, man. I mean, you want to be the truth. You want to cut people a year too soon rather than a year too late. But if, you know, if they've got money and it's tough, man. He's one of those players that I'm sure a lot of people are wearing his jersey on Sunday. And if you don't have to cut him and he's still productive, I say really hurting anything. And if Ladarius Green is ready to step up and be the guy, then he should get those snaps. Like, they're staff will see those dudes every day in practice and they'll know who should be out there. So if that guy's not ready to take the step and Antonio's still finding ways to get open with the beer belly and whatever else he's got going on, I mean, I don't know. I guess I've always been a fan. I huge respect for Gates, so wherever he lands, I hope that, you know, hope he lands on his feet.
Well, and the other thing is, I mean, the other reaction I had was just, is that surely it's, you know, it's a move to sort of boost up his stats for a Hall of Fame bid. And, you know, and I knew that he was close to catching up to Tony G, my all-time favorite player, and I was thinking about that. But, you know, I hadn't really looked up his stats and compared him to the greats. I mean, but, you know, just to compare those two guys, where, I mean, Tony G's best ever tight end, and he's already in the Hall of Fame, right? Yeah. Anyway, so Antonio Gates, his career stats are 844 catches, 10,644 yards, and 104 touchdowns. Tony G is 1,325 receptions, 15,000 yards, and 15,127 yards, and 111 touchdowns. So, I mean, there's an obvious gap there, but on the other hand, I mean, at least on like the tight end stat, I mean, he could easily catch up with Tony G next year.
He could catch up on something like touchdowns. He will never, ever in his life catch up for Tony G when it comes to yards.
Yeah.
You know, touchdowns are, you know, if when it's to make his Hall of Fame case, touchdowns are going to be sort of the main thing that you're pushing for it. And yeah, if he has a productive year, especially in the red zone, specializing in that area, he could conceivably catch up to Tony Gonzalez. He's still not near where Tony G was. But it another feather in the cap of what has been, as I said, absolutely incredible so far.
I got to side with Jerry Jones on this one. Stats are for losers and they relish in them. If you've got to break down the stats and make a case for why a guy should be in the Hall of Fame, the game has changed. I mean, the last 10 years, every quarterback is throwing for 4,000 yards, and that wasn't the case back in the 70s and 80s and 90s. Like, were you the best player? Were you an all-pro? Were you an elite player for an extended period of time? If you need to sit there and break down the numbers to make your case, for me, it's a no, you know, like the Jared Allens, the Julius Peppers, the Antonio Gates, they're all great players, fantastic players. I would have loved to have them on my team. But were they truly the elite, the best of the best in the league? I don't know. For me, if you got to make a case for it, and it's not a no-brainer, I don't know if it's a Hall of Fame. It's the Hall of, okay, you are really, really good.
So it's a no for you on both Gates and Allen?
Gates, I would give Gates a yes. I mean, he's been an elite all-pro tight end for as long as I can remember. So Antonio Gates, for me, is one of the best tight ends I've ever seen. He's in that Tony Gonzalez upper echelon for me. Well, and so for guys who specialize in just sacks.
Well, that's one of the things. You threw out Jared Allen here, and I know that you and Justin disagree on this. He also, that's another piece of news. He is just retired, and so he's now in this, you know, Hall of Fame conversation a bit as well. He had 136 sacks in his career. No for you. We know that. Justin, what do you think? Hall of Fame, yes or no on Gates, and then on Allen?
The more I think about it, and the more I kind of ignore what Monty says, and I look at the stats, the more I think Antonio Gates probably is a Hall of Famer. I'll be completely honest with you. I agree with you for the most part about stats and how they change with the times and all that. And not that you have to throw them out the window, but you have to take them with a grain of salt. But I think there is one notable exception. I think you are number one in a major category. I think that has to count for a lot. In the case of Antonio Gates, he very well could be the number one tight end in touchdowns in the entire history of the football. In the entire history of football, and that matters. If you are in one way, shape, or form the best ever, you've done it more than anybody else ever has. Take Jerry and the stats are for losers and toss that out the window. That counts. When I look at Jared Allen, I somebody who I feel like I was always hearing about every week on SportsCenter or on the news or in the papers, making fabulous plays in the backfield, a guy with a high motor who was consistently high in sacks. He led the league in sacks multiple times. He had several years of double-digit sacks. He's only missed like four games his entire career. If we're talking about all-time players with all-time great skill sets, to me, Jared Allen is easy. Does that mean I think he'll go first ballot? No, because I don't know who's going to be on there with him. And I feel like pass rusher is about to come into a little bit of a logjam. And Antonio Gates might get an easier because there's not that many really effective tight ends that I think are going to be in there around the same time. But to me, I think they both make it in. But if I had to pick one, give me Jared Allen, and it's not that close to me.
Well, we'll have to move on. We can talk Hall of Fame for hours and hours, but it is really interesting. I think Allen is sort of borderline. I think Gates is in solidly. But we have to talk about some other guys that might end up in the Hall of Fame here in a bit. We were planning on talking about a lot of free agents, but the kind of three interesting additions to the players that are out there. Or, you know, what, you know, one person might say would be the three best Rams. The Rams released defensive end Chris Long, tight end Jared Cook, and linebacker James Laurinaitis. That's quite a coup. It's interesting. We've been talking a lot about whether or not the Rams were going to really make some hay and catch on like wildfire in Los Angeles. I mean, obviously there's a lot of people there, but I don't know what LA fans are going to be watching, you know, if they're cutting even all of these, you know, mainstays, particularly the defensive guy.
Yeah. You know, NFC West guy, I've certainly seen a lot more of these players than I think most people have. I mean, the truth of the matter is in regards to Chris Cook, in regards to Jared Cook and Chris Long, both of those guys were very, very good players before they were Rams. They have been, for the most part, lousy as Rams. They haven't, any of the success of the Rams that they've had, which has not been much, I don't attribute those guys at all. Chris Long in particular has been a disaster on that team. James Laurinaitis has played some really good football for them. I'm a little more surprised by that. He's been more of a core player for them. But this is a team that is in that weird kind of perpetual rebuild mode. These are kind of expensive players, so I understand it. But at least, you know, three of those, you know, maybe they can rehab themselves elsewhere. But I'm almost surprised they were still on the team as it was.
We've got to be the dumbest team in America in terms of playing the game.
Clearly, you're not too interested in these guys, Justin. But, I mean, what about you, Monty? Do you want your team calling any of these guys?
Oh, of course. You're telling me that you wouldn't want to see Howie Long's kid lining up in the silver and black on a Sunday? just for depth. I mean, I don't know his contract situation or how expensive he is. I thought he was a good starting defensive lineman in the NFL. He's not a game changer or an all-pro. But yeah, man, some part of me wants to see Howie Long's kid lining up in the silver and black. Of course, we've got money to spend. I say we spend it. Let's get Howie Long's kid out there. The player from the Rams who I'd really like to see, who I think is hitting the free agent market, is the cornerback named Janoris Jenkins. The Raiders obviously need help with defense, and that would be the one Ram if I could go out and pick one. But yeah, part of me is always going to have a soft spot for the whole Long family. If they have grandkids and the whole next generation, sign them all up. Howie Long was amazing. And if his kid needs a place to play football for the next few years, I'd love to see him in Oakland.
Now, would it surprise you if I told you that Long had a combined total of 4 sacks over the last 2 years, despite being one of the highest paid defensive ends in the league?
That is that the fact that he's the highest paid defensive end, or one above of the highest paid, is shocking.
Yeah.
Well, either way, I mean, he definitely had a lot of promise and hasn't lived up to it. That's pretty clear. Laurinaitis was also a really high first round pick, wasn't he? No, maybe it was second round. Either way,
second
he's
round,
a high pick.
Second round pick.
Yeah, and he, I mean, he's been an impressive guy. I mean, he's the sort of dude that the only way that I see any of these guys ending up on the Chiefs really is if they don't re-sign Derek Johnson. We're going to get to that. And Laurinaitis, I think, would fit his role pretty well, but I'm hoping they just keep DJ. But now that we're kind of talking about free agents, it's time to shift over to that. So we Pro Football Focus put out a good list of the 75 top free agents, and you know, and it's ranked basically according to their own you know, metric system and all that kind of stuff. And so we're going to run through these as quick as we can, you know, and so some of them, especially at the top, I mean, they're just obvious franchise tag candidates. And even the ones that are going to make huge amounts of money that they can't get on the tag for some reason or another, these teams are probably going to figure out a way to massage their payroll and keep them on. But one of the most interesting ones is Pro Football Focus's number one free agent, and that's Von Miller. It seems like, you know, the confetti was still swirling around in Levi Stadium when we were already talking about this on the podcast of what happens with Von Miller. The Broncos are going into this free agency period. I mean, last I looked, they had about $10 million in cap room. I think with they're now talking that the cap is going to be up to $155 million, so that would give them, you know, another five-ish more, but they still got to spend about $5 million signing their draft picks. And you know, Von Miller is gonna demand a big coin. What do you think he's, you know, is he a franchise tag? Is he gonna be on the market?
Farewell Peyton Manning and give all that money to Von Miller. It seems like a no-brainer to me. I don't know why people are even talking about the Broncos are not gonna pay Peyton Manning whatever his salary is this year, and the Broncos need Von Miller to lock into a long-term deal. I think this is done and done. I don't think it'll even get to the franchise tag.
Yeah, it's borderline silly to me to have him on the list. He's technically a free agent. There's 0.0% chance he goes anywhere. They're going to try to sign him to a long-term deal, and if not, they're going to franchise him. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. They'll do whatever salary cap magic they need to make that happen.
All right, so your buddies are both pretty confident that Von Miller stays a Bronco, and that saddens me. All right, but moving on. Alshon Jeffrey, wide receiver, Chicago Bears. Tag?
Tag. No, tag. No question.
All right. Cornerback Josh Norman of the Carolina Panthers.
Ben. No question.
I think he gets
the heck out of him.
And defensive end Mo Wilkerson for the Jets. I know they'd like to keep him, can they?
Huge fan of him. I play in an IDP league, awesome fantasy football league. He's actually been on the squad a few times. He's stud. I just don't know if it makes sense to pay him the kind of money that the market will bear. You know what I mean? Like, I think he's going to be able to make a lot of money, and do you lock up that much money in Muhammad Wilkerson? So if I'm a Jets fan, it would suck to see him go, but I think it makes sense to let him hit the market and see what he can get.
Yeah, in general, I would say what you can to keep him, because I think he's just such a great all-around player. The thing that I'm not totally sure about is how well he fits in Todd Bowles' scheme, who took inherited Mo Wilkerson. If he thinks he can get equal production in ways other than him, I could see them letting him walk. But that has nothing to do with how good of a player Wilkerson is, because he's terrific. I'm just not sure how he meshes with Todd Bowles' scheme.
And the next two guys on PFF's list,
I think
he's
the biggest prize. He's the biggest prize in free agency that's not going to get tagged, I think. It'll be interesting to see where he lands. I think he's going to get the contract.
That's interesting. Well, staying with defense, the next two guys are both defensive ends. One is a household name for sometimes for the wrong reasons. The other one, I actually don't think many people know as well, but he's number five on PFF's list, and they rate him very high with a 92.5 overall grade. And that's Olivier Vernon, defensive end with the Dolphins, and Jason Pierre-Paul with the Giants. Both defensive ends, are both of them staying with their teams, you think?
From where I'm sitting, I don't see any reason why anyone would pay Jason Pierre-Paul top dollar contract to play football. I don't even know. I mean, when he came back after his make any play, like, him only came up when he was not playing and they're going through the contract stuff. Like, I don't think he ever made a play. Why would anyone give that guy any money? He's definitely hitting the market, and I think he's going to be saddened and shocked to see that he's not making the kind of money that he would have made if he had not gone out on the 4th of July.
Yeah, these ranks are based off of Pro Football Focus's ranks, and I think you need to put them in the right context for why these players are as high as they are. Olivier Vernon is a good football player, but I think he grades much, much higher because you have guys like Cameron Wake who are pulling all the attention. I think that if he leaves for a big money contract and has to be the number one guy, I think you're going to see his productivity take a huge dip. So I like him as a player. I think it just in terms of how his career shakes out, he's best staying in Miami and not chasing top dollars, which he can probably get elsewhere. Jason Pierre-Paul, I think he's mainly small sample size kind of where, you know, they don't have that many plays to grade him on. He gets some pressures, gets some hurries, and it makes his grade look fat. Can you trust this guy at all? I don't want my Seahawks to touch him with a 10-foot pole.
Amen.
I do remember, though, I mean, even with half a hand and having it all being wrapped up like a crazy club, he had some of the best and biggest plays in that big game they had against the Jets late in the season. I think he's still got something. I mean, someone's gonna give him some money, and he's gonna get a chance somewhere. But
pennies on the dollar.
Yeah. So just to kind of hop around here a little bit, there's 7 and 10 on this list are both tackles, although one's kind of a guard tackle. And I think it's interesting. It's Kelechi Osemele from the Ravens and Cordy Glenn with the Bills. On one hand, having a solid offensive line, I think, is one of the most underrated things in this league. But, you know, also, if you start actually giving top dollar to all your O linemen, or at least a lot of them, that gets really expensive really fast. Are these guys on the move? And how much is too much to pay for an offensive lineman on a year-to-year basis?
Glenn in particular is tough to me. Buffalo, a lot of the success was because they had such a good offensive line. You know, Richie Incognito went there. He played really, really well. I don't know if they can keep both of them. If I could only keep one, I would rather keep Glenn because I think he is less likely to get kicked out of the league for being an idiot. but with two players who are going to cost some money and the tackle being the one that's going to be a lot more expensive, I just don't know if they can keep him. I don't know enough about their cap situation and all those sorts of things. But he's a great player who I know there's no chance that we would ever get him up this way, but I would love to see him in blue and green.
I also think that when somebody's made a name for themselves as offensive lineman and they're going to get the free agent, like, there's enough teams out there that are willing to pay them more than what their home team can afford to play. You know what I mean? So they've earned enough respect where people are like, every team that's super in the league is going to say, I could use an offensive lineman. You know, and everyone could use that, and the teams that can afford it in whatever particular year you're in generally are going to pay it. So it just seems like when somebody hits the market, if they get to that point and they haven't extended by now, they're going to go get paid.
Well, yeah, you guys stole our center last year, Rodney Hudson, for like $9 million a year. And granted, he's a very good center, but $9 million for an interior lineman is just an to me, a crazy amount of money to have invested in that position.
But it's like a huge middle finger to you, so it's worth it. From where I'm sitting, it is worth it.
So, speaking of the Chiefs, the in between those two linemen on 8 and 9 on this list, you have safety Eric Berry, who I think we don't need to spend too much time on. Of the big Chiefs free agents, he is the one that I think is most likely they're going to lock up no matter how. I mean, even aside from the fact that he's one of the best safeties in the league, he's also just been this great story for the team, comeback player of the year, and he's basically been the de facto mascot ever since his cancer diagnosis. So he's staying with the Chiefs. But Malik Jackson, defensive end from the Broncos, that's where this whole Von Miller thing is sort of interesting. They can't pay Brock and Von and Malik Jackson. I think one of those guys is going to be hitting the market. I think Jackson is probably the most likely one, but he's a very good player.
You know where he's going. You know, open your heart right now. What does it tear? Is Malik Jackson playing football next year? You know where he's playing. Say it out loud.
Tennessee Titans.
He's coming to Oakland. Oakland's got the money. Del Rio's familiar with the Denver staff, the Denver players. It just makes so much sense. He's in his prime. He just seems like he's coming to Oakland. He's going to be getting text messages from Khalil Mack right now. In fact, I think I'm going to tweet both Khalil Mack and Malik Jackson right now and tell him to make it happen. I mean, it feels like that's where he's going to be.
So the next two guys on this list.
Awfully excited.
Go ahead, Justin.
Well, let me just chime in. So leading up to the Super Bowl, I was the one guy in here on record as saying I thought that Denver was going to win that game, and I almost nailed the score. And a lot of it had to do with
two guys. Two guys. I was on your wagon with you. We were both on there.
All right. So we were popping champagne while everybody else cried. Malik Jackson had a lot to do with why I thought that they would be able to control that game, because I think he's such a good player, and he is versatile. He's that guy who on running downs can bump outside, on passing downs can bump inside. You can put him in the line. He literally will fit any team and be highly, highly productive. I think he's a good player, and I think he would be a terrific fit in Oakland. That being said, my one concern with whatever team picks up, and I've seen this happen with all players, is when you're a very good player who becomes really well-known following a good performance in the Super Bowl, your price goes up substantially compared to what you're really on the market. So I think there's a little bit of a buyer situation, even though I like him a lot. I think wherever he goes, he'll be pretty badly overpaid, and he won't look as good because he won't have guys like Miller sharing the line with him. So my one little asterisk with what is otherwise a player, quite a bit.
So Justin agrees he's going to get overpaid, which he's going to come to Oakland. And the fact that Khalil Mack's there helping take some of the attention, it feels like it fits. But Oakland's not afraid to pay people money in free agency who had a huge Super Bowl and then come to Oakland and kind of shit the bed. But I'm hoping Malik Jackson bucks that trend. He definitely has the talent.
Well, and the next two guys are also interesting. I mean, 11, you guys talked a lot about him on Thursday. He is best known by asking rhetorical questions.
You like that?
Kirk Cousins. But for our purposes, regardless of, you know, we can talk about what he's worth. I think it's pretty clear he's going to be playing in Washington still next year. If you guys have thoughts on that, toss it out there. But the next guy is safety Eric Weddle from the Chargers, who is really interesting. I think we can be pretty much guaranteed that he's not going to be playing for the Chargers next year. And so, is he going to be, he's a good safety, obviously a volatile personality. He's good for you as long as his daughter's not playing on the field during halftime. What do you guys think?
Well, two quick thoughts on Eric Weddle. One is I can't remember the last time I saw a player who has been this good for a team this long, been this mistreated by the organization right at the end. I'm definitely team Eric Weddle with the way that the separation has gone down. The other side is, isn't signing an Eric Weddle cheaper than you'd expect, who's still really, really productive, just the most Patriots thing you can imagine?
No. This feels like a Raiders move up place. His family's on the West Coast. He wants to stick a middle finger to the Chargers organization at least twice a year. I don't know what the going rate is on a 31-year-old safety, but the fact that he would get to stay on the same time zone where his family is all going to school now, which apparently is very important to him, and he'd get to play the Chargers twice a year, just feels like he's coming to Oakland, guys.
I'm a big fan of the way that you're just taking like the top 15 players.
Yeah, all of them. I think, I mean, there's a big open spot for a veteran safety in the Raiders' defense. I mean, it makes quite a bit of sense. But so moving on, another one that I, you know, another Chief. It's the next two are cornerback Sean Smith of the Chiefs, and another Bronco. Broncos linebacker Danny Trevathan. I really hope that the Chiefs figure out a way with the money to keep Sean Smith. I think he's been really underrated. The team really showed how different the Chiefs defense can play when he's not on the field. He started out the year on a 3-game suspension. It took him a couple more games, I think, to get totally, you know, in the swing of things. And that was when the Chiefs were getting their rear ends handed to them in paper bags every single Sunday. And they're a total lockdown defense with, you know, with him and Marcus Peters on the other side, but he's going to make huge money. I don't know if the Chiefs are going to be able to pay him. There's a lot of chatter that he's also going to become a Raider, but you guys can't sign everybody. And Trevathan as well is a.
I think they've got think room. They can afford it. They can afford it. All of our best players are still on their rookie contracts, and honestly, so they definitely could afford it. I don't think that's Reggie McKenzie's style, but boy, stealing quality starters from your division rivals, it just feels like a win-win.
Well, in regards to Sean Smith, I like him a lot as a player. I don't think he's a real number one corner, and I think by the end of this upcoming year, he wouldn't be the number one corner on the Chiefs either. I think Marcus Peters is going to take over that role. What you could see is if he signs for – if he wants a lot of money, I really think the Chiefs are better off letting him walk. Develop a good number two corner, and Marcus Peters takes over that true number one role, I think you end up with a corner pair – as good as this past year's, if better, and you know, for $10 million a year less. So you know, not to tell you how to run your own franchise, that's your job. But you know, if he wants real, you know, number one type money, I say let him walk.
Well, and so we have two more divisive guys next on the list, and it is quarterback Sam Bradford and guard Richie Incognito at 15 and 16. To me, it's, you know. I mean, who knows? I mean, this is the silly season where we hear, you know, leaks from both sides in terms of contract negotiations and them being tough. But, you know, the fact that Howie Roseman went on the air the other day and said very clearly, like, yeah, we'd like to have Sam back, but for the right price. I mean, that still, it's not, doesn't sound, you know, like a big deal, but that's the sort of clause that usually GMs that are about to re-sign a guy don't say. And I don't know. To me, I say write it down. I think Doug Peterson, the new Eagles head coach, who used to be our offensive coordinator, I think he's going to bring in our backup quarterback that's on the market, Chase Daniel, to Philadelphia. I mean, it'd be a wise move, even if you're going to, you know, train somebody else on Peterson's system. But I think there's a real good shot that he's going to be starting. And then Incognito. I mean, who would have known a couple of years ago where apparently this guy was like the most hated player, at least by fans, you know, in the NFL. Now he's going to be making a big pot of money somewhere.
Yeah, Richie Incognito, Bradford, to me, Richie Incognito, when he was with the Rams, was almost like the off-the-line version of Ndamukong Suh. I mean, every little cheap shot, every little like ticky-tack move you can see out of a dude that's like 350 pounds, he was doing, always drawing like fights and getting these stupid penalties. He is, you know, I don't know any of these people personally, but I can say with a lot of certainty, he's just a bad guy. He played really, really well when he had something to prove. I don't think he's going to recreate that kind of production. Maybe I'm biased, but man, I just, that not a guy I could ever count on. So I don't care what team you are. I wouldn't touch him. Sam Bradford. I think it, at this point it's clear he's like a slightly more injury-prone version of Ryan Fitzpatrick. Yeah, he's one of the best 32 quarterbacks on the planet, but really if you want to go far, you need one of the top 16, not the guy chalking in at number 28. So, you know, Eagles need somebody, so I guess Sam Bradford will work, but he's not the answer, not for anybody.
So I think we can all agree Cognito will probably end up in Pittsburgh for Pod's in New England for Pod's Patriots. Sam Bradford, it was shocking that Chip Kelly moved to get him out to Philadelphia. He hasn't proven that he's worth anywhere near the kind of money that he has made in his NFL career. So Sam Bradford to continue playing quarterback in the league from like just a regular fan's perspective, no, don't care about the Rams, the Eagles, or any teams. Like, it just seems insane. Like, he needs to take a reasonable contract to play and prove that he can win, because he might be one of the best 16 quarterbacks on the planet, but he's not winning games.
So just to round out the top 20 here, you know, the next four we have here, you have nose tackle Damon Harrison from the Jets, who I'll be honest, I don't know anything about. Apparently he's a very good run-stuffing nose tackle, but like any good nose tackle, he's basically invisible stats-wise and to anyone who's not, you know, like really watching that defense. You have guard Evan Mathis, who's probably going to, you know, just like last year, he's going to do a one-year deal to a contender. I don't think the Broncos are going to keep him. Running back Doug Martin's interesting. I think he stays in Tampa Bay. And defensive end Robert Ayers, who's another sort of under-the-radar sort of guy with the Giants. Any thoughts on these four?
I think the muscle hamster is definitely going to stay in Tampa Bay. I forget what – is it the Duggernator? The Duggernaut. The Duggernaut. He doesn't like the muscle hamster. He likes the Duggernaut. But he was productive. I think they've got something to build on there. I know they got a new coaching regime, so it'll totally depend on what – they feel when they, you know what I mean? Like they don't owe him anything. So it's kind of, he's not their guy. They inherited him. So, but I'd just be shocked if he left. The nose tackle, it's tough to say. And for me, like the interior defensive line, interior offensive line, like they're kind of a unit. So when you're trying to signal one of those elements out, if they can get more money going to another team, it's hard for the home team to keep them. Just because, you know, you've got so many other needs on a team. So, I don't know. I think all those guys, they're good enough to make a splash in free agency. It's going to be tough for their team to keep them.
I'm kind of interested in what happens with Evan Mathis. He's a guy where I think at this point of his career, his name is bigger than his play is because of his years in Philly. I would say not as a guy who, if he's looking for another kind of one-year prove-it deal after a so-so year in Denver, would not mind seeing him come up to the Pacific Northwest. I think that he still has a lot of productive football in him, even though he didn't have the best year. In regards to Doug Martin, I think you're going to have to re-sign him. I mean, you're trying to bring along a young quarterback, and to give him a very reliable running back to kind of help him shoulder the load, I think, is nothing but good for his growth and development. At this point, you know, Doug Martin's at that kind of half spot where he's still young. He still has a lot of tread on the tires. He can be good for years to come. But he's been around long enough. He knows what he's doing. He's good in protection. You know, he can catch the ball. He can do it all. So I really hope they lock him up. Robert Ayers is another player where I think he's very, very good. He's not a huge name, but I think that I see him sticking around with the New York Giants next year. He might be their best defensive lineman at this point. He's really a very, very productive player. So I think they kind of need to try to hang on to him.
Yeah, so that is the Pro Football Focus's top 20 free agents of 2016. I think we've gotten some really good stuff going through them. And granted, there's 75 names on this list, and we could talk about these guys for hours. You get football dudes around. But I do think we need to move on for time to our to-do list. And actually, it's quite fitting because number 21 on this PFF list is Derek Johnson, the Chiefs linebacker, who I really hope they're able to keep. And by the way, these to-do lists, you can find the text versions of them on our Facebook page, which is, you know, just if you search for Next Fan Up podcast on Facebook, you'll find them all. And you, I'm sure you'll find things you'll disagree with. And there's, and we'll be going through as the fans are on the air of the next several weeks leading up to the draft, giving their thoughts on what they think, if they are the GM, what they think their team should do. But just to jump into mine, you know, the Chiefs are in a situation where I mean, free agency in a way, it's going to be fairly boring for them because all of the moves they need to make are internal. They have a fair amount of cap room. If we do end up with about $155 million cap, and you know, after the Kelce extension, the Chiefs have about $30 million in cap room to work with, but they have a huge amount of players that are potentially hitting free agency, including eight really important starters and role players on the defense. I mentioned Derek Johnson, but also, you know, and we talked about Eric Berry and Sean Smith, but also, you know, backup safety Hussein Abdullah, who's very good. Yeah, Tamba Hali has come to the end of his career now, or not career, just about the end of his career, end of his contract, I meant to say, Freudian slip. And also defensive ends Jay Howard and Mike DeVito. And Howard was really a sort of a bit of, he was a big success story for the Chiefs this year. I mean, he is arguably the best defensive lineman on the Chiefs this year, and he definitely had the most stats. He was extremely disruptive. They got him for cheap off waivers off the, I think it was the Seahawks practice squad. And he's going to get a big payday somewhere, but I just don't think it's going to be with the Chiefs. The Chiefs run too many in nickel and dime. They pretty much run two down linemen. And so, you know, and they've already given some, you know, pretty hefty money to Alan Bailey on the other side. And at the end of next year, Dontari Poe is coming, hitting free agency, and they're going to have to re-sign him as well. So you can't have three really high paid guys on the line. So I think Howard goes, and they should let him go. But of the guys you got to throw money at, I think Eric Berry you absolutely have to keep, and he's going to, and if you do a long-term deal, I think you can probably get him at around a $10 million cap hit, at least for the next couple of years. If they can do that and get Derek Johnson on a somewhat team-friendly deal, I mean, he's 33 years old, but he's been one of the best inside linebackers in the league for years. And everyone was sort of expecting after he tore his Achilles in the first game last year that he was more or less done, but quite the opposite. I mean, he had a bit of a slow start this year, but man, the second half of the year, he looked as good as he's ever has. I mean, he actually lost a bit of weight. He looked faster than I think I've seen him in years. I mean, he may just be my favorite Chief at this point. So he's one of those players where I admit I cannot be fully rational about. I want him to continue playing for the Chiefs and retire a Chief. But so, I mean, that $30 million, though, is going to go really fast, especially if they want to pay the big money to Sean Smith. And I think he's going to make Byron Maxwell money, and he probably isn't going to be, you know, Justin had his views on it. I really think Sean Smith's very good. The thing is, he doesn't put up, again, great stats because he has awful hands. He can, I mean, you hand him the ball, he will drop the interception. But he has really long arms. He's like 6'2", 220 pounds. And so he can be really rough with receivers. He blankets them in coverage. And even though he's not super fast, he's just so tall that quarterbacks can't throw over him. And I think it's a really great mixture of him on one side and Marcus Peters, who's a far riskier guy who tries to jump a lot of routes and gambles a lot more. But I think that combination is great. And I think they should try to keep it because they definitely don't want to mess with the thing that makes the Chiefs so competitive. On the offensive side, you know, free agency overall, I mean, it would be nice if they had the money to throw at some, you know, a wide receiver they could make like a legit number two, a guy who could be at least injury insurance for Jeremy Maclin. But I just don't think the money's going to be there, unfortunately. I mean, guys like Mohamed Sanu have said that it seems very likely he's going to be leaving the Bengals. Also, Marvin Jones is probably going to be, you know, leaving the Bengals. And you also have Jermaine Kearse, actually. I'd really like to make the Chiefs make a run. I'm interested in Justin's thoughts on that, if he's going to hit the market. The other big thing, though, that they really need to improve on the offensive side is offensive line. And the good news is they do try to fix that with free agency rather than the draft, although I imagine it's going to be a combination of the two, is that there's been so many fairly high-profile veteran linemen that have not only are going to be hitting the market, but a ton of them got cut. I mean, I'm not sure if it was mentioned, I don't remember, on the previous podcast, but just in the last week, you had Jari Evans from the Saints. You had Jermaine Bushrod, Jeff Schwartz, and his Jeff Schwartz's brother, I think it's Mitchell Schwartz. All really good offensive linemen have now hit the draft, and they're not all going to make, you know, top money. I mean, I think the presence of all these veterans is going to dilute the market, and I think the Chiefs are going to be able to get someone for a bargain if they wait a few, you know, wait for the initial wave or two, the first couple waves of free agency. They're going to be able to find a relatively cheap veteran addition to the offensive line, which they really need. And that's the big thing. I mean, when it comes to the draft, I mean, I could try to talk about what I think the Chiefs are going to do for the draft. What's interesting is that after 3 years of this front office, I think what they've telegraphed to us is that GM John Dorsey, he likes to set things up so that they can go into the draft with options in it, the option to take the best player available. It's a great defensive line draft at the top. But I don't know. I mean, I think the Chiefs could go in a lot of different directions. And I think they will approach free agency in a way that they fill those holes ahead of time. I mean, and it, like there is always initially there's a lot of questions of whether or not Andy Reid really had stepped away from GMing. But the fact is, I mean, he's actually having a knee replacement surgery during the combine. He's not even going to be going. I mean, I think it's pretty clear they've totally handed the reins over to John Dorsey. And he knocked it out of the park last year. If they can even just get like a few workable pieces in the draft this year, I think the Chiefs are going to be contending. I think they need to be setting themselves up for a Super Bowl run. That's going to be the barometer for success in this season. And so I've been rambling for a good long time. I'm curious what your guys' thoughts are. And I also want to hear Monty and what his delusional plans to sign every single free agent in the world and how that's going to get them to the Super Bowl.
I do have a question for you because we talked about it a little bit on Zach, and I think it's kind of interesting just because as an outsider and, I mean, as a Raiders fan, Jamaal Charles is the all-timers killer, and you seem pretty confident that he's going to come back and still play at that elite level, as I'm kind of seeing how successful Patriots have been since they started cheating with Bill Belichick and cutting veterans a year before they're too old to play. And I think to myself, boy, he's one of those candidates. And I just thought it was interesting. I read what you wrote, and I had no reason to, you know, not buy into that, but I just thought it was an interesting point. Like, I think that over 30 running back coming off of two major knee surgeries is one of those prime candidates, but it sounded like you still think he's got a lot left to get in a Super Bowl run.
Oh, yeah. No, I think – and who knows? I mean, he's going to be coming off an ACL next year, so he may not be the same. Although he posted a Vine yesterday of just sort of what he's doing in recovery already. Four months out of an ACL surgery, he's already, you know, jumping rope, running around, you know, catching balls while balancing on the ball and doing this sort of stuff. His knee looks strong. He seems to be ahead of schedule for his own recovery. And look, I mean, he's not as fast as he was when he was 25, but he's still an elite talent at the running back position. Again, we don't know what's going to happen when he comes back from the injury, but he is one of those special players that, you know, that unless it's an insanely bloated contract that's hampering you, you know, money is not a problem with this guy. And what we're paying him, I mean, I think it's something like $5 million and change this year and $7 million next year. I mean, I think he'd be a good candidate for sort of a long-term restructure that might, you know, extend them with a little bit less money, you know, but, you know, I'm confident this guy is going to be around and be good. I'm curious what Justin thinks, and you had another question, I think.
Yeah. Jamaal Charles is one of my all-time favorite players, and I don't just say that because he's been so good on my fantasy team, so I hope he comes back strong. You know, kind of letting go of a legendary running back is something that I'm going through right now. So maybe I'm just being wistful. what I want to know is, do you feel like Alex Smith is the guy? Like what's your take with him? Can he get you where you need to go?
I think so. You know, this is something that I wanted to bring up, but I didn't want to make it all about me during the Super Bowl. But, you know, you look at even just this last year, which, I mean, even before this, the 2015 season, I've been sort of saying, like, okay, this isn't really the Chiefs' year for a ring. It's going to be next year, but they have to build on it. Like, let's at least win a playoff game or something this year. So, you know, you look at the Chiefs and the season that they had, that first game to the Broncos in week two, the Thursday night game where they lost in a heartbreaker with a Jamaal Charles fumble that they ran in for a touchdown to win it, and it was really just, they literally threw the game away. And then they demolished the Broncos, you know, in Denver, you know, weeks later. But just that game and literally just that fumble, if you switch that, and, you know, it's always all this magical thinking of like what ifs. But seriously, if the Chiefs win that game, they go into the playoffs with the number one seed. They don't go to Houston and have Jeremy Maclin get injured and have the recovery of guys like Holly and Houston be retarded by the fact that they have to they were playing on the field there and they still weren't fresh going into Foxborough. If the Patriots have to come to Kansas City and the shoes on the other foot. I think it's likely that that game could have ended up the same way that it was when the Patriots went to Arrowhead in 2014. I think the Chiefs could have demolished them the same way that Denver did. And then it's the Chiefs ending up in the Super Bowl. And, you know, the stout defense of the Broncos proved way too much for the Carolina Panthers, who, you know, looked great all year, but they were clearly outmatched there. I mean, I think the Chiefs would be able to do roughly the same thing to the Panthers. You could see that playing out in the same way. And in terms of Smith, I mean, you know, he's obviously the Chiefs would be better off with it. You know, there's at least 10 guys better than him in the league, and the Chiefs would be better off and have a better chance of winning a Super Bowl with someone better, but there's no way to do that. And that's the toughest thing in football. And I think actually he showed a lot of growth this year, and he played the best football of his career this past year. I definitely think he can get us a ring.
For Alex Smith at a playoff game, he was with the Niners, and I think it was against the Saints, and they each put up like 40 some odd in the playoffs. That made me a believer, Alex Smith, that he's at least he's a good quarterback. I don't think that is any concern for the Chiefs, right? It's just trying to keep everyone healthy. If their whole roster had been healthy this year, I think you're right. They would have made a little bit of noise in the playoffs. And if they can get everyone back next year and go forward, I wouldn't be worried about Alex Smith. He's not as good as like a Derek Carr, but I mean, he's still a pretty good quarterback.
That is true. So speaking of Derek Carr and the Raiders, what is your to-do list for your team?
I think for the Raiders, it's pretty simple, right? Like I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm all in on what Reggie McKenzie is selling. The Raiders' biggest like free agent that they need to sign, like all of our best players, anyone that you know of that's on the Raiders is still on their rookie deal. So all of the names that they have, they've got a lot of holes that they need to fill, but like to me, the biggest player that they need to keep and make sure he does not walk is their punter. He's an elite punter. I know that sounds dumb, but when you're losing and you're punting a lot, you need to have a good punter. The Raiders special team has always been kind of something young. Seabass and their punters have always been good. So I'd like to see them sign their punter. I know that's stupid, but I'm just going to say it. Their offensive line, they have no tackles, so that would be my biggest wish list. The Raiders need to get some tackles when you're facing the Justin Houstons and Von Millers of the world. If you feel you are good at tackle, go get another good tackle because you need some depth, because you're going to face the best pass rushers in the league every week. So the Raiders need a tackle. They could use some help at guard, but I think everyone knows that their defensive backs are some of the worst in the league. But I will say there is a shining spot. Pro Football Focus did rank David Amerson as one of their best, most improved players from the year. So he started off. It's a flawed stat, right? So he started off so low from the year before that the fact that he's kind of in the middle of the pack makes him a huge jump. But if he can just continue to get better and improve, I mean, that's been an issue since Nnamdi Asamoah has left the team. We don't have any good cornerbacks. So if he can continue to play and at least be just a good starting cornerback in the league with the pass rush that the Raiders have put out there, like I think that they've got a chance to make some noise. With the players that were on the roster this year, they won 7 games. And so if the Raiders can steal one quality veteran from the Raiders, so yeah, man, it's February, so I want the Raiders to sign every good free agent that you brought up. But if they could just sign one good quality free agent in the prime of their career, like a Rodney Hudson, maybe they overpaid him a million or two more than he might be worth. I don't know, but he is still a starting center. And if the Raiders could just add one of those pieces of free agency, like one quality interior lineman, and then work through the draft to fill some of their needs on the back defense, I think that they're going to make some noise. If you look at some of their skill positions, they just signed Crabtree. I think had a great year. He kind of had a prove it contract. He did prove it. He had a good year. And they didn't sign him to some crazy Al Davis contract that's going to set him back for 10 years. Kind of signed him to a reasonable contract to lock him up for the next two seasons. Their rookie tight end, I think Clive Warford is going to be a stud. He started to come on towards the end of the year, and I think you give him a few more reps and a few more looks, I think he's going to be good. I was going to say, next to Rodney Hudson, Gabe Jackson has been ranked out pretty well in all of those websites, like the Pro Football Focuses. Like, that guy might be a superstar in the making as far as interior offensive linemen go. Everyone knows about Cooper. Everyone knows about Khalil Mack. David Carr is having, you know, a hell of a season last year. And this offseason, he doesn't need to learn a new offense. He's playing for the first time in his professional career in back-to-back seasons with the same offensive coordinator, the same coach. He's got his receivers, and he just seems to be the kind of guy who's going to put the work in. So I know it's February. I know I've had a few beers. I know that I'm getting, you know, excited about what's out there. But I think, like, objectively, if you look at what the Raiders have, and they've got money to spend in free agency, I don't think they're going to sign all the guys that I was throwing around. But if they signed one, in specifically Jackson from the Broncos, if they could throw him a million or two more than anyone else and get him on the roster, then all they'd really need to focus on in the draft would be everyone in the world wants a left tackle. So they might not be able to get that this year. You know, they've got a few competitors up for free agents. I'm sure that the Raiders will be able to re-sign them if they can't get anyone better. Couple of tackles, and then of course safeties. I think they restructured Nate Allen's deal, so I think he was gonna make $4 million. They restructured it down to $2 million. I didn't really follow him in Philadelphia. I don't know how good he was in Oakland. He was injured for most of the year. Safety is a huge concern for the Raiders. So as far as cornerbacks and safeties go, that is a huge hole. But they only really need to cover someone for like 3 seconds because Khalil Mack will be in there and make a sack. So they just need some, you know, it doesn't have to be the greatest cornerbacks in the league. They just need people that can cover. DJ Hayden, I'm just about ready to call a bust. TJ Carey has had flashes. He's played well in some games, and he's totally gotten smoked in other games where you're like, man, we need some cornerbacks. But, I mean, he could maybe be a nickel corner. I mean, they've got pieces that they can move around. They just need a few foundational pieces. And I think that another good draft, maybe one good free agent signing that doesn't fail the physical and get sent back to St. Louis because the Raiders are going to pay him some crazy amount of money, like that offensive tackle from the Rams, but solid free agent signing. The Raiders are going to knock on the door, and they're kind of in the mix towards the end of the year, and then they could just have fizzled out. I think 2016, the Raider Nation is going to be ready to make it back into the postseason. I should both of you agree with me.
Well, the thing is with the Raiders, I mean, for one thing, what I find entertaining is that, you know, when I don't remember what the number is, but when I saw how much this cap room that the Raiders have, I just imagine them being like, you know, the kids, and like, it seemed like a bigger deal in the 90s. Like, you watch like Nickelodeon, you could like win, like, you know, the shopping spree where they like give a kid a shopping cart and let him run nuts through the store, just like dumping whatever he can into his cart and they get it all for free. That's kind of much how I imagine the Raiders approaching free agency. And by the sounds of it, you know, the fans are on board for that as well. In terms of the Raiders, I mean, their path to improvement, I think the issue is just the division is so tough for them. And I'm not just talking about the Chiefs, but I think, you know, the Broncos are not going to totally collapse. They're not going to be as good as they were, you know, this past year, but they're still going to be competitive, I think. And I think that the Chargers are going to be surprisingly more competitive as well. I mean, I think it's just going to be a difficult division to get out of unless you win it.
All right, well then, as the guy who is not in the AFC West, let me ask you both, and let's go ahead and just start with you, Nick. Gun to your head, what are the final rankings 1 through 4 in the AFC West at the end of 2015?
Well, not a surprise. I would put the Chiefs at the top, Raiders second, then it's tough between, like, it's going to be Broncos or Chargers. I think it's likely that the Broncos will end up in the basement, but they might all be winning teams, actually.
And I do think that I off the top of my head, it escapes me, maybe Nick, you know, but the Raiders had the division that they played in 2015 was like the NFC West. I think it was your division, right, Justin? I mean, the Raiders played a tougher schedule in 2015. I think they get the AFC South in 2016.
Yeah, we all get an easy schedule. We're playing the AFC South and NFC South. So the only really good team in there is the Carolina Panthers.
I think that it's good for everyone. Like, this year is going to be a good year. I mean, maybe it's just like false hope, right? But it seemed to me that the more and more tape that people had on Brock Osweiler, the more and more that offense seemed to struggle. And maybe it's coincidence, maybe not, but nobody in the world would say Peyton Manning was an elite player in that playoff run, but he still was started in favor of Brock when Brock was struggling against the Chargers at the end of the season. Like, he got benched at halftime. Peyton came in and won, and he wasn't playing so lights out that the coaching staff was like, there's no way we can bench this guy. The more tape they got on him, the Broncos, the other teams were able to defend him. So he's still a question mark to me. Like, the fact that the Broncos defense won so many games in 2015 doesn't make me feel that the Broncos quarterback's position is totally locked up for 10 years. Phillip Rivers is awesome, but man, he's banged up and that whole team is banged up. I just think that Phillip Rivers is a good quarterback. Kenneth Priest, the Chargers super fan, is a good guy. I mean, I want to buy him a beer when I hear him talking about how upset he was with how that season ended up. But I think that that window is closed. Like, the LaDainian Tomlinson, Phillip Rivers Chargers, that's in the rearview mirror. They've got to blow it up and start over from fresh. I think it's time for the Raiders to take over. And okay, the Chiefs. Go ahead, man.
What's going to be the ranking at the end of the year?
Well, Raiders Super Bowl champions. I think that's obvious. Everyone can agree on that. I'll probably go Raiders, Broncos, Chiefs, and the Chiefs and Broncos probably have the same record, but Von Miller wins the two head-to-head matchups single-handedly because he's an animal, and the Chargers are. You know, the Chargers are going to be in the mix for Pod Vader's Sounders with the first pick in the NFL draft, the San Diego Chargers select.
Yeah. It's going to be one of the – I think it's going to be one of the best divisions to watch. I mean, the NFC West has been really tight for a long time. I think the AFC West is going to be the same, at least for a couple of seasons. It's going to be good stuff. And I look forward to arguing with you about your delusions, for several seasons to come. And, you know, and no, for the record, we're not all on board of the Raiders' obvious Super Bowl pick. But what we are on board on is a podcast that has gone over an hour. We've had, I think, a good time here. We've gone through some really, really good discussion points. We hit free agency, and we talked about these, obviously, the two, well, one of the best teams and one of the okay teams in the league. And Justin had to sit through all of it as a guy from an entirely different conference. But I think it's been fun. For all those listeners out there that are still awake, you can find more of us at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. You can tweet your excitement or your loathing of this show at NFU Podcast on Twitter. You can also email us your ravings to nextfanup@gmail.com. And again, we're taking applications for superfans. If you want to join us, and be able to ramble about your favorite team just like us, you're welcome to try. Anyway, any parting shots with you two gentlemen?
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter, just at Koreis, Koreis. That's my last name. I'm also active on Facebook, on facebook.com/homeofthe12s. That's the big Seahawks group on Facebook, so we can interact there as well. If you feel like my ratings are junk, absolutely write into the show or tweet me or post there, and we can have a good old verbal fight about it.
Where can we find you, Monty? Are you on the interwebs?
Yeah, at Monsadius on Twitter, exactly how it sounds. If you see a picture of Bo Jackson from Nintendo's Super Tecmo Bowl, you got the right guy. Go ahead and fire away. And yeah, man, I'm just looking forward to drinking a few beers, talking with some super fans on Sunday nights about how they see their division shaping up. I think that Justin's division, the NFC West, is still going to play a huge role in how next season plays out as far as the playoffs go. So yeah, I'm looking forward to just chatting it up with you guys, and you know, hopefully we'll get Justin back on and we'll kind of break down his team.
All right. And there we have it. Thanks, folks. Talk to you on Thursday.
We couldn't do diddly poo.